Association is bound to enforcing those rules and regulations.
They have authority to enforce those rules and regulations. Most, I don't, unless I would, the deed restrictions impose an obligation for them to do it, I don't know that they're necessarily obligated to, they just have the authority to.
Well, if...
You can't go sue a homeowners association because they declined to enforce the restriction. There's no cause of action for that unless the deed restriction would provide for that, which most don't. I've not seen one that does, that requires a HOA to enforce a deed restriction.
So if, let me just, I'm really questioning this. So, in my particular case, I have homeowners that the grass is growing up like this.
Okay.
Which, I'm in the process of possibly moving. That, along with junk cars, which also will stay in there, can't be there, limits the amount of asking price or what it can receive. Now, are you saying that the homeowners association is not bound to enforce those?
They're not required to. They have the authority to, but they're not required to. It's the same as a police officer, right? If a police officer sees a crime, they have the authority to enforce the crime. You can't go and sue them if they don't. If they exercise their discretion and say, you know what, I'm going to let that one slide. You, as a, you know, a citizen watching that, can't say, well, wait a second, you have to ticket them. I don't have to. I can. I have the authority to. But there is no obligation for me to do so. You know, now, I mean, outside of employment, but that's the distinction. So there is, if your neighbor's grass is too high, and you go to the homeowners association and say, file a complaint, the homeowners association can enforce it. They can say, okay, we're going to do whatever we can to enforce that. Or they can say,
so what's the recourse of the homeowner that has the complaint?
Each homeowner also has the authority to enforce the deed restrictions. So you can, if your neighbor has junked cars on their property, the HOA was refusing to do anything about it, you can file suit against them. You can say, you have to move this. This is in violation of the deed restrictions. I'm injured by this. I'm going to sue to enforce it. In your own individual name. You do not have to go through the HOA. That's how it's always been. And they're all that way. So each, so like, in, because in my neighborhood, we don't have an, where I live, there's deed restrictions, there's no HOA. So the individual homeowners can go in and enforce those deed restrictions. There's no HOA to do it.
And that's kind of what we're hoping to move to.
But even if there is an HOA in place, an individual can always just directly go against their neighbor. They don't have to go through the HOA. They don't even have to file a complaint through the HOA. Well, I don't even want to mess with the HOA. I don't like them. I'm just going to do it on my own. They have the right to do that. As a party that is benefited by those restrictions, you have standing to enforce them.
So then, if the homeowner has a complaint, he had, that person, that homeowner has no ability to sue the homeowners association.
Not for not enforcing the deed restrictions, unless again there's something in the deed restrictions that, you know, gives them some requirement, you know, contractually. If you could find some statement that says, "Hey HOA, you shall ticket every person that lets their grass get too high," maybe you could take some sort of action against the homeowners association for not following the deed restrictions.
Let me jump on that for a second and ask then, we carry insurance for the board. What are we really protecting at that point? Just the fact that we're doing some kind of nefarious...
Yeah. The big thing you see, I mean, you're holding money that isn't yours. So if someone, you know, started defrauding
If somebody HOA made
or,
claims that you did.
Yeah,
if you did something illegal, you'd be liable
sure,
no matter
you know,
what,
there's,
right?
There's lots of videos, right, of over-eager HOA people that go and basically commit battery or property damage or, thinking that they have some authority to and they don't.
But the insurance isn't going to protect you with that because you're doing something illegal, right?
If they're doing it under the color of the HOA potential, then the insurance should cover it. You know, if a rogue HOA president goes and says this mailbox is the wrong color and knocks it down, the HOA insurance would cover that. Now, they make you get rid of that person, but, you know, assuming that you hadn't had other reasons to...
It seems like it's kind of wasteful to even spend the money on the insurance if you know you're not going to be doing anything controversial, but then that doesn't stop you from being sued for something.
Yeah, I mean, it's those kind of instances that...
Yeah.
Okay. The big one you see, and I'm on a couple of nonprofit boards here around town that is financial crimes.
Yeah.
Someone goes and absconds.
Yeah, I can see even if you didn't abscond money, you could get blamed for it and end up mm-hmm. in court. You'd need some kind of support.
Yeah, defense funding, that kind of stuff.
Because I wouldn't have claims. Any sympathy for somebody that was stealing. I'd like whatever, you know.
Yeah, but the HOA gets sued, and you know they're like, well, why didn't
deep pockets get the?
Yeah, why didn't the president do anything? Who was supposed to be watching this?
Okay.
And the law provides some amount of liability protection for the board members themselves, mm-hmm. assuming they weren't actually involved.
It just seemed kind of redundant because...
But it's things like defense costs and, yeah, I mean, and in theory, that's why the insurance on nonprofits isn't super high either, because
yeah.
there's just not a lot of claims and
I
the law gives a lot of protection.
I noticed my homeowner's insurance has skyrocketed in comparison to the board's insurance hasn't done much
yeah,
of anything.
Because the risk is low.
Risk is low, yeah.
But...
Okay.
That's what it's for.
I'm sorry, Dick. I didn't mean to jump in.
But yeah, generally there's not any, you couldn't go and sue an HOA to say you declined to enforce the deed restrictions and my property value declined. That's
well, you
not
can,
usually.
You can sue them, it just, the judge may not hear it, right?
I mean, my opinion is the law would say that that's not a valid, there's no basis in law for that type of claim. There's no obligation on the HOA to do it. Again, it's just they have the authority, but not the obligation.
So I'm trying to relate this back to city law and all. If there's a pothole and they don't fix it, but they get a complaint on it, there's a hazard, they become liable for it.
If someone is injured later by it, yes, because it's a special defect. There's a lot of different rules.
Yeah.
But again, going back to, for example, the police example, you see this a lot. And some states have tried to amend that, particularly in the domestic violence and protective order. There's been several big cases in the last 20 years where, for example, protective orders were not enforced by the police. Someone had a protective order against a violent, you know, spouse or ex-spouse, and they called the police, and the police didn't effectively or declined. To enforce it, and there was an injury later, and the courts have said, yeah, but that's not something you can sue cities for, because there's a certain amount of discretion that is given to enforcement of the law. You can't sue a city for not doing something. You can only sue a city for doing something. Now, the example that you have brought up, and it's only certain types of special defects like that, but that's a premises liability.
I could see the same.
The one I'm talking about was on the street, and that's
yeah. So
the court
so
actually ruled that they had to do it.
Correct. So on streets, this is not related to HOAs, but
I don't
for well, for special defects on roads and other thoroughfares.
So,
if the city has knowledge of the defect, it does not fix it, then it can be liable for someone that is injured by the defect.
Even as landlords, we run into this. You and I are both landlords. We know how that works.
Correct.
You
know? That's just kind of a general premises liability. And that's because the law has made the city liable for premises liability in certain instances. But again, like an enforcement of the law, there is no general requirement that a city or a government... You
sure.
cannot sue the government for not enforcing the law in most instances. You just can't. Like, you can't sue the IRS because they... let your neighbor not pay taxes on something they should have paid taxes on. The IRS has the authority to enforce that, but you can't say that's not fair. You know, they're not paying their taxes. The law requires them to pay their taxes. IRS, go make them pay their taxes. You have no standing to do that. You can't enforce that. And generally what the courts will say, and in the context of an HOA, is if you don't like the way the HOA is enforcing the deed restrictions, then go elect a new board. Go elect a board that will do it. If the one that you currently have isn't doing it.
Well, in this case, once we can look at it, is how you dissolve the board. So then all restrictions are gone?
The restrictions don't go away, just the board, the HOA, at least
so
what I've seen proposed.
So who, which comes down to my big question on that, who enforces that?
The individual property owner. So you become like my neighborhood is. There are deed restrictions in my neighborhood that say you can't do certain things, and it's up to the individual homeowners to enforce.
Whether individually or a group.
Yeah, I mean, a group could get together and if they want to share costs or something like that.
So if something was egregious enough, you'd probably be able to muster up a good-sized group.
No.
But if it's over, you know, junk cars or tall grass, then you're probably on your own.
Yeah, I mean, it can be sort of frustrating for the person next to the lot because the people on the other side of the community don't really care. But yeah, it's not, that comes up. It's a problem. But yeah, I mean, that's essentially what it has to become, a big enough thing that an individual homeowner, a group, is willing to put up the money that's been required to file for the enforcement because it costs money.
You know, is there anything we could put in the deed restrictions that would, like, allow for the homeowners to recoup costs if they were successful in a claim? Or is that just kind of standard, or is it like boilerplate? It happens.
I've never seen that.
So there's nothing we can. I mean, if somebody's going to have to come out of the pocket for $50,000 to fight somebody over, or say a big pig farm comes in, or chicken factory, or
I've
something.
I've never seen that. So I mean, and I guess I don't know that you couldn't put it in there.
I mean, is there a way to structure your lawsuit that, you know, you're looking for damages? You would.
So the property code allows the prevailing party that is seeking to enforce deed restrictions to recover attorney's fees from the other side. Now, whether the other side can pay for them or not is a different question. But yeah, I mean, if your neighbor is violating the deed restrictions and you sue them for it and you win, you can ask the court to award you attorney's fees. In fact, the court is supposed to award attorney's fees.
Okay.
Now, how much they give you is discretion.
So there's really no need to even express that in.
Well, you know, it depends on the other side's ability to pay them. But that also comes up. The other thing, too, though, is say you put it in the deed restrictions. And because one of the things that, and I can't remember if yours is one, I've talked to some other HOAs, too, is, I mean, even with assessments in there, people still just don't pay them. And so what if they don't pay?
So you got to take them to court again to sue for...
and you can get blood from a turnip. Most of the people that live out there that would be a violator probably don't have funds to...
You know, here, the HOA law, I mean, the HOA laws, the assessment comes with a lien. Like, the HOA gets a lien to enforce the assessment. The courts have generally upheld those. Now, in that situation, I don't know how they would treat that. I mean, most of those have looked at it just as a, you know, kind of an assessment
civil suit,
lien.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm saying when they're looking at enforceability of that lien, because it's a home. Most of these are going to be homesteads, which you don't. Most liens will not attach to.
Mm.
So a general judgment lien won't attach to a homestead, for example. So if you get a judgment against your neighbor for damages or for attorney's fees as a result of that, you know, breach of the deed restrictions, it's a judgment, but you can't, for example, foreclose on their house. Now, if they have some other property that's not their home, or if that's a rental property, then you can't, but you can't get a lien on their homestead. But the assessment lien that an HOA can collect, that is considered a valid lien against a homestead.
Okay.
The whole way they kind of made it similar to a tax lien, basically, is what they did.
There was something on liens, too, I just recently found out. And I don't know if it's true or if it's something I just misread, that there's a... expiration date on these liens you put on property, 4 years?
As a 4-year statute of limitations to foreclose on a lien, generally.
How does that affect the ability for an HOA to put liens on property?
Well,
then?
Each year is a new lien.
So do you have to go and file a new lien then every year for non-payment? Keep it fresh?
Kind of.
How it works?
Could we not just do it every fourth year? You'll always have a lien in effect.
So I don't know that you have to file anything. I've not done really foreclosure of HOA liens because most HOA boards don't really like doing them.
I think it's mostly just to hold the lien to...
So I don't think you have to file anything to preserve... The lien is just there by virtue of the deed restrictions. So you actually don't have to file anything. If you want to foreclose, you have to go to a court to get an order. So it's not a non-judicial, it's a judicial foreclosure. There's kind of a simplified process for doing that. And so when you go to the court, you're going to have to prove up the unpaid assessments. And I think there's probably a 4-year statute limit. That's the 4-year is if there's no specified statute limitations. So like in the statutes, they'll say for personal injury, it's 2 years. For defamation, it's 1 year. Like it says in their breach of contract, is 4 years. If it doesn't otherwise say, there's what we call just the general statute. So for all other causes,
I think
of
it's called on the property code that it's actually 4 years.
Okay, it might be. Yeah, I haven't looked at that. That probably what that means is you can only go back 4 years of assessments.
But the lien itself, does it need to be refreshed every year?
The lien is already there.
Right.
It's like a tax lien.
So the lien is there. What we're talking about now is foreclosure. So
yeah,
the lien stays there. We don't have to refile the liens. It's just if you want to threat foreclosure, then it has to be in effect within the last 4 years.
You can probably sue for the last 4 years of assessments.
Gotcha.
It's similar to a tax lien. So your taxing authority has a lien on your property for the amount of unpaid taxes. It doesn't have to do anything for that lien to be in effect. It's just there by operation of law. And so if you don't pay your taxes, the taxing authorities will go and file a lawsuit and ask the court to issue an order allowing them to foreclose on that lien.
And foreclosure has really never, in my opinion, been an intention for filing liens. It's to receive payment.
Yeah, I mean, it's meant to be a stick
to
encourage people to pay. But yeah, I mean,
The problem we're running into right now is we've got several that haven't paid, and we're looking at filing liens. Matter of fact, we're moving through the process because it's gotten extensive now over the last couple of years on how you've got to do it. And wondering if it's even worth the trouble, because we still catch those properties when they sell.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I don't think you have to necessarily put anything of record that there's past due assessments, because that's what the resale certificate does.
We've had a few properties slip through because they're cash deals, so they don't go to a title company.
They assume the responsibility for it because
we've made progress on a couple of
those. Because, again, that's what the code says. It says you have the right to ask for this, and if the HOA provides one, then the HOA is going to be bound by what it provided. So if you as the HOA make a mistake in that resale certificate and say there are no assessments due, that buyer could then say, I'm not responsible for it because you told me there wasn't any owed. There's nothing you have to do to protect that. So what would happen as far as limitations would be, say a homeowner didn't pay for several years, but then maybe they sell it in a cash sale or something, right? And so then the new owner starts paying for 4 or 5 years. It's like, well, you can't go back 6 years ago and say, oh, well, I'm going to foreclose for those assessments 6 years ago. Then they could say, wait, statute of limitations. You waited too long to try and get those. You're going to have to show some non-payment in the last 4 years.
Not to be the nervous Nelly, but we have 1 hour this morning. Is that, and
yeah,
we're already 20 minutes.
Out for, yeah.
We're 20 minutes into it.
I mean, mostly, I probably need to leave around noon because I got to get ready for my 1:30.
Okay.
I got to look at some stuff for them.
But yeah, my concern is Dick brought up some really good questions, and I think a lot of, we can answer many of the questions on page one if we do page two.
Yeah.
Because page two is really the heart of the discussion we're really focusing on now, and that is, what happens if the HOA is dissolved? Now we have discussions leading up to what is the best strategy to attempt that dissolution, number one. But then, what happens if it's dissolved? So I'm in a property, the HOA is gone, but the updated deed restrictions, hopefully updated deed restrictions, are now in place. And I think we've already said, at that point, the individual homeowner, if a violation is so egregious, my grass has gotten up to here, Dick is getting tired of telling me to cut my grass, that if it's so egregious, the property owners themselves can go to court to sue for enforcement of the deed restrictions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I say egregious enough for him to be, that he's willing to...
It's an opinion.
Yeah,
it's an opinion.
It doesn't have, there's not like some standard that it has, I mean, it has to be a material violation. Generally, the court is going to require that, but, I mean, the court's probably going to consider anything written down, they're going to say, well, that's material, right?
Okay.
So
do we want to take the next 40 minutes and talk about, is there a strategy to move forward on dissolution? And then if so, Dick brings up some really good questions on, we're going to have to tell homeowners as part of that process, what is the path forward? So Roy Martin, if you have an issue, this is how you're going to have to resolve it, because no HOA exists at that point.
I don't know if you necessarily have to advise them on going like that. I mean, that's...
It's going to be a natural question.
That's more on the persuasive. What do you want to, how much, you know...
Exactly.
What do you want to tell them to get them to persuade? But there's no obligation to counsel them on that. So I've gone through some amount of that. So these, and you can take these with you because I've saved them. This is from the Attorney General's website on closing a charitable nonprofit corporation. Okay. It seems fairly straightforward. There's several steps, but none of them seem overly complicated. I don't know if y'all have used an accountant for anything.
We have our treasurer, and we're simple, straightforward accounting. So
I'm not an expert on tax, IRS taxes. We have a couple people in here who might be able to answer some of these. I would assume you don't file anything with the IRS. You're not doing any sort of...
We do.
There's
a franchise tax through the state of Texas.
That's Texas. But are you filing anything with the IRS?
I don't think so, because I don't think we're obligated to.
Yeah, and most of them aren't. Yeah, so there is...
The grandfather was saying it's true for the Congress.
Yeah.
I thought I printed the one from the IRS, but... I'll print it before y'all leave. The IRS, if you're not, you have to notify them, basically. You just got to tell them. If you didn't formally, most HOAs, I don't even think, formally applied for 501c3 status. You don't have to.
I thought we were.
We are.
Okay.
If you formally applied with the IRS, it just depends on the form you use to notify them, whether you formally applied or haven't formally applied. And whether you're filing or not filing, but it's basically there's just a notification requirement to just tell them, hey, we've dissolved this. And generally, you just send them the dissolution papers from the state. So you do the state dissolution first, and then you just notify the IRS, hey, we dissolved this entity. Here's the dissolution. For the state of Texas, there are certain declarations you'll need to make. And I know we talked about this last time. The main thing was, what do we do with any of the money? If there's any money left after winding up. And so one of that you can look to see, is there anything that we can do as an HOA before, if we feel there's excess funds that are going to be available? Is there anything that the HOA is responsible for or could, you know, legally use that money for that you want to do?
Yeah, one of the things that came up was just like to maintain the website. It's not very much money at all, but to maintain the website for a couple of years. So when people are curious or have heard that we have an HOA, that the website's still there telling them that, yeah, the HOA's been dissolved and this is what you do.
But I think that's going to be just the big thing, is figuring out that's going to be one of the big items, just figuring out with the money.
Yeah.
I've printed this. So this is from the Texas AG's website that kind of gives you a summary of how that happens. Right. Basically, you need to make a plan of dissolution. This is what we're going to do. This is where any leftover assets are going to go. The entity, the board, the members will need to vote on that. And so that's under the business organization.
Board members or the members of the association?
The members of the association need to vote. So you're at a
general...
That'd be part
of our ballot then?
Yeah. So either you could do it all with the, voting to get rid of the HOA and amend the deed restrictions. So you need to either do it at a regular or called meeting. Now, under the business organization, so the property code to amend the deed restrictions requires 2/3 of the total ownership by acreage, right?
Yeah, 8.03, you can look in detail at that. It's kind of weird. It's before the 50 years, it's 66.6%, and then after the 50 years, it's 50%.
So to amend these, you need that percentage.
And then there's some verbiage in there about the declarant. So the declarant can do...
Yeah, and you've got to
get the
declarant to sign
off on it. I think the declarant can do this on its own. He doesn't need to vote at all.
But to actually, wind up the entity itself, because you are a filing entity, that's what the business organization code says, that you need 2/3 vote of those that show up at the meeting. So you would notice the meeting, that needs to be on your agenda, and then you get... Assuming a quorum is present, this is the procedures for approval. Okay. So if the management of the fair, so that's if it's under the members. If the corporation has members with voting rights, the corporation, so that's where, there's a letter in here. That's fine. So it's this one right here. Because you have members that have voting rights. The corporation's board of directors approve a resolution recommending the winding up. And then they direct that that winding up and distribution plan be submitted to a vote of the annual special vote of the members.
Let me be clear. Winding up means the date the HOA dissolves, the what we do with the funds, what we do with the physical assets.
Yeah, I would have the, just, you need a decision to do the winding up and then also to approve the plan for the winding up.
But this is totally independent of the actual vote to do away with the HOA.
That's
they could be on the same ballot, but
yeah,
they're
a different
I mean, thing.
It's the same concept. I mean, you're going to need both. You know, you can have a vote to do that, and probably what you would do is that say, you know, we're going to do that contingent upon us getting 2/3 to sign, because this will take longer, yeah. Right? And so I would probably put in there that it's contingent upon you getting 2/3 of the acres to sign off on that. But, and so
you said something, and did we discuss that as part of the I missed the first 10 minutes. There is some oddness in the acreage, because sometimes acreage is used in legal terms as a generic term. I purchased an acreage. Sometimes it's very specific. There is language that Don was able to point out that says, no, it's actually tied to the number of acres.
Yeah, that's so how I read it. 66 2/3% of the total acreage.
Okay.
So with that means then larger acreages.
The larger acreages have a higher vote.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we have our lawyer confirm that. All right, Dick.
That's
so
how I read that.
Acreage
and it doesn't seem ambiguous to me at all.
It's not ambiguous.
Not to me.
And that is within precedent. There is state precedent that says it can be done that way.
I don't know. I don't see why it can't.
Okay. No concern.
I don't know of any requirement that it has to be equal votes.
Okay. So
and
I'm
certainly
glad we
isn't.
Were...
I will say there is precedent for the fact that certain areas of HOAs will have more votes than others, just like corporations do. Right.
So
some members might have higher votes.
Cool.
So, yes.
Okay. Well, that's good. We clarified that before
we were going to get pushback on that.
Yeah.
And now it's crystal clear.
Yeah, and I know for certain, like you'll have these, particularly like mixed use HOAs, for example, right? Like the and you'll have commercial. Some of the big commercial ones, they get a much larger vote, right? These malls, right? If you're Dillard's and you're in this mixed-use HOA, you want a controlling vote. You're like, if I'm going to put my Dillard's here, I want to be able to control what happens here. So I don't want just one vote, one parcel. Mm-hmm. I want 30% so that, and you know, this little boutique shop over here doesn't get equal vote to me because I'm Dillard's, right? I'm bringing the people to the shopping center. I want control. And there's absolute precedent for that.
Cool.
So I wouldn't see that being an issue at all. It's you agreed to that when you bought the property. So the smaller lots, if they're going to say, hey, that's not fair, it's like, but that's what you agreed to.
Right. Okay. All right. I wanted absolute clarity on that.
Yeah,
because
we've got a few, because some of the properties that are smaller are actually more valuable than the bigger properties.
Significantly more valuable.
Well,
so,
and
they would probably have some reason to complain, although
you see that
almost unanimously everybody wants to do away with the HOA. There's just a few that don't.
I've seen square footage done in condominiums, particularly, you know, when you have a
but we have the language that talks,
yeah, but I'm saying, like, I've seen that type of precedent of, you'll see that in particularly commercial condominiums, right, that you have, you know, this lot at the end is a third of the strip mall.
Gotcha.
That's a condominium, and so it gets a third of the vote, and then the other 2/3 might be split among 10 little smaller. Same concept. Even in residential condominiums, they might do that on square footage.
So we have to have a general meeting with a quorum of the property owners show up?
Board members.
Or board members.
No, so for the business organization code, so what it's saying is if the corporation has members with voting rights, I didn't look at your bylaws.
So let's say, for simplicity's sake, we've got 100 property owners. We'd have to have 67 of them show up.
Show up
no,
to
60,
the
meeting. They 67 that show up, 67% that show up.
But
67% of those that show up at the, that are present at a meeting called for that purpose.
But you said quorum. So the
well,
quorum applies
quorum
to the board of directors?
No, you have
to call the vote.
We also have to have a quorum of...
You have to have a quorum of the meeting of the membership.
Members. Even our annual meetings require that.
So for it to be a valid meeting, there has to be a quorum present, right? And so for this transaction...
I'm going to be a persnickety here. You're saying a quorum. A quorum of the membership of the HOA, not a quorum of... So the... Let me
Whoever's going to make the vote, that needs to be a quorum of that... That group.
So none of our prior annual meetings have had. Or I don't think any of them have
no,
had. And I get it. We haven't been
voting. It's a lower threshold. It's a lower threshold for quorum.
For voting the
for quorum
members.
Of the members. I want to say it's 10%.
Maybe that's the minimum I think in the business organization code is.
Yeah, I think that's in the property code. It's like 10%. So we only need 10 members or 10 people show up at 100 owners. 10 members. Property ownership, which the last annual meeting
for the annual meeting
was
okay.
Bare. We had just that.
So you have a meeting. Let me pull the picture. Okay, so vote required to approve a fundamental action. At least 2/3 of the votes that members present in person and by proxy are entitled to cast at the meeting. At which the action is submitted for a vote, if the corporation has members with voting rights.
So 2/3 of those who show up. But again, what is the quorum required to even call the vote? Is it just the board of directors?
In an organization, I think the board of directors has to open the meeting and then you have a vote of the general
public. But the language Stephanie used was significant action. So I would
fundamental
say
action.
Fundamental action, sorry. So for a fundamental, is dissolution, I would assume that's a fundamental
action.
Yeah,
no, the business organization code says it is.
Do
so
we
to
only
dissolve
need
it, you have
the
to,
quorum of the board of directors, or do we need a quorum of
the group that is voting. So if the members must vote on it, then it's a quorum of the members.
So we do have to get a quorum to show
the
up at the meeting.
The question is what constitutes a quorum of a HOA, of the members, membership.
Right.
Does your bylaws specify
no,
that?
But I did see it somewhere in property code. I want to
yeah,
say
yeah, then you go, you're
going
to go to the...
But I don't... I am not privy to... it was one of those website searches, you know?
Okay.
And I found a really good spot where it had a whole bunch of stuff, and I looked at it and went, oh, I can't forget this spot because it's got a lot of good information. And then I lost it.
You
and so it's one of those.
There is an official site for the Texas statute.
Yeah, I can almost remember the code. I looked at it a couple times, the property code. It's pretty extensive. And it gets into
there's a
HOAs.
And I'm sorry to get in the weeds, but this is a non-starter. If we don't get this part right,
yeah. So
then
if you
it's
don't,
a non-starter.
I believe the Texas Business Organization Code. And I don't know if that's where we were getting the minimum quorum for. Because your bylaws, I think, only speak to the board of directors quorum. They don't speak to the membership. Is that...
Sorry, 20%.
Okay.
For board meetings, a quorum typically requires 50% of the board members who are present, 20% of the for an annual meeting. Now, I don't know if this would fall, annual meeting would fall under the same rules as.
Okay.
HOA cannot reduce a quorum requirement below 10% according to Texas public law. And then again, you know, they got to be, the members got to be in good standing or not. You said it last time that it didn't matter if they were in good standing or not.
Yeah, that's not generally. Okay, unless otherwise provided by the certificate of formation. Members of the corporation holding 1/10 of the votes entitled to be cast in person or by proxy constitute quorum.
Say that again.
So under the business organization code, it's 10%.
So for nonprofit 10% corporations. 10% of the property owners need to show up.
And then 2/3 at that meeting.
And 2/3 of those have to
Of those that show up have correct.
To
so if 50% approve. Showed up, then 2/3 of them have to approve it.
But it only requires 10% show up.
To be a meeting, yes.
To be a meeting.
At least 10% have to be there. Otherwise, you can't do anything.
And then 2/3 of that, whoever show up, might be 10%. Then they can approve the plan to move forward
with the dissolution. Update. Yes.
Okay.
To dissolve the corp, because you're a filed nonprofit corporation. So to get that dissolved, that's what the nonprofit corporation laws say.
Gotcha.
And then again, as part of your plan, like I said, the main thing for your plan is what are you going to do with the assets? You need to pay off any debts. That's the structure of your plan, is what debts are owed, figuring out what...
Would that include the date of the dissolution of the HOA as well?
Yeah, so you need to account for what you're going to need to spend or pay for to go through that process.
Because the HOA could actually, in effect, operate somewhat after the vote, and so let's say we had the vote tomorrow.
Yes.
We decided we were going to dissolve on December 31st.
Yeah, the membership is basically telling the board go through with that plan, move forward. Once the last step, generally, or almost last step, is once you file that dissolution certificate with the Secretary of State, that dissolves the entity itself. Really, the only thing I saw after that is to send that off to the IRS.
Okay.
Just to notify them. But since you don't file returns or anything with them, I think it just provided an address. So just notify this address that entity has been terminated.
Okay.
And then...
That's good, because now would this be part of the ballot? We would explain on the ballot that we're going to do away with the HOA, we're going to distribute funds in this way, and we're going to dissolve the HOA at the end of the year.
I would have your dissolution plan as part of the...
As the ballot, it'll be on the ballot.
Say we want to dissolve the entity, and here's our plan for doing that. Vote yes or no. Because, I mean, it all goes together.
Does it take a further vote? Okay, so this is the plan how we're going to go about it. We had talked about it's a high threshold. We're going to have issues. So does this require the second vote? The first vote is to approve the plan. This is our plan. Here's where we're going forward. We need 2/3 of y'all who showed up to approve our plan.
Mm-hmm. And then that would go on the ballot because it's already approved.
To have the second vote somewhere down the line of all the membership and 2/3 of those.
So I would probably put in your, because that's part of your dissolution plan, is you need to get the deed restrictions amended. So I would put that as part of my dissolution plan.
Gotcha.
Is saying that, you know, the dissolution plan, and I would make the vote determination expressly contingent upon us getting that 2/3, because you got to tell people if we can't get the 2/3,
we can't dissolve.
And in effect, you need to do that before you actually take the formal steps to dissolve, right? Because you don't want to get rid of your filed entity and then not get the 2/3, because you're like, well, you know, crap, so, then we got to go reinstate.
But we need the approval first, so we get the approval. Put that on the ballot. Explain on the ballot that this is what the approval process will look like, along with this is what the amendment will look like. This is what we're voting on. Boom, vote on it.
Yeah.
And then the effective date would be on there as well. So the effective date of the dissolution, assuming we get the 2/3, would also be on the ballot.
Yeah, right. And like I said, I would give yourself plenty of time. So, you know, like you could say, you know, by the end of 2 years. Doesn't mean if you don't finish early, you can. Like, but that's how I might structure it. I might say, okay, here's our dissolution plan, is we're going to go and try and get 2/3.
Does that limit any of our kind of our spending or anything? As long as it's part of our dissolution plan, we're okay, right?
Mm-hmm. So like you say, okay, the first step in our dissolution plan is to go get the deed restrictions amended, because it's all contingent upon this, right? If we can't get the HOA out of the deed restrictions, then we can't dissolve the entity, or we don't want to dissolve the entity.
Right.
Because it gives you protection
so long
as it's in place. So that's step one on the plan. assuming that gets done. If that gets done, then we move on to, and this is really just administrative at that point, because you've already got the consent, you've already got the vote to move forward. So then the board just goes forward following the steps of the plan, saying, okay, now we're going to pay off any debts, and here's the expected debts that we're going to have. We need to pay off these expenses. And then we're going to, what I would include in your plan is if there is anything left over, what is going to happen to that? And now what the business organization code says is you need to give that to another nonprofit entity that has similar goals.
So it doesn't have to necessarily be turned over to the state. We have, all right, it has come up in the past, ideas of, can we just take some money and give it to the local fire departments who are saving our butt every time we have a pasture fire?
So what the business organization code says is make distribution of its income.
As long as they're 501c3s themselves.
Yeah. Basically, so and then have similar goals. I think you could sell the fire department. I mean, they're there for the protection of the community.
It's probably not going to be pushback from the
The fact
as long
that
as they're
there,
a 501c3, the
correct.
Fire department
as
would have to be a nonprofit.
I don't know if, for example, you have a volunteer fire department out there.
That's all we have.
That's all we have.
I would assume that they're a nonprofit. So yeah, I would think that should qualify, but you'd have to. You might need to check with them.
Randy Riggs tells me that's the comment.
So I think that very much meets it. I mean, if nothing else, your insurance rates are affected by the fire coverage. So you can say, hey, it goes to property values. And
well, I don't think the problem would really be with the homeowners. I think it would be, you know, with the state. If somebody came back and said, hey, that's an illegal.
I get the impression the state does not
get involved
unless someone asks them to, and even then, you need to know the right people in the state.
Yeah.
The AG's office.
Because even trying to redistribute it back to the homeowners, it's only going to be $100.
Generally, that's going to be prohibited.
Yeah. And even then, it's only going to be $100, you know, at best. So.
Yeah. So you're just saying there's no reason for a property owner to argue.
Yeah. It's
A, we can't give you the money back because you're, Roy, you're not a 501c3.
But the fire department is.
So, Roy, do you disagree with us just dividing the money amongst the fire
department? And I will tell you, if you get some people that say, well, why can't I? You can tell them that the business organization code actually generally
requires
that.
Yeah.
It says, a dividend may not be paid to, and no part of the income of a corporation may be distributed to the corporation's members, directors, or officers.
But
there are some exceptions, but
we could use the money to pay legal fees, the things we need to do to make this happen. We could probably even put lights on our front entrance area or something areas.
Yeah, because after this closes up, you're not going to have anyone to do that.
Time to refresh those front gate entrances and Legend Oaks and stuff.
But if we're talking about keeping certain services active as long as we can, for example, a website, and we're having to pay yearly fees.
I would have it prepaid.
Prepay. Okay.
I mean, and you could say that's part of the winding up process. We're going to maintain this website.
And it's pretty insignificant. My wife runs it, so it's less than $100 a year. So.
No, I think that's, again, just have it in the plan. And I'm not saying you have to list, itemize every single expense, but general categories of expenses.
Legal fees and paying for notary would probably be the only.
Yeah, I'll just make sure that there is a.
And then so that slacker, Roy Martin, didn't pay his fees, and so we put a lien on his property. We had talked about this before, but let's say it again. What do we do? We've got 15 properties out there with liens. We know we're dissolving.
Have you filed anything?
Have we filed the liens with the county? Yes.
Okay, so you filed something in the deed records
saying? They're old. I'd found 11. I think some of them have been cleared. I didn't go through them individually. I just went down the county courthouse and looked.
Let's say there's even 11. What do we do with that one? Now that we're dissolving the HOA, there's nobody to remove that lien.
Correct.
So you don't want to leave that lien on Roy's property, even though Roy is a slacker.
I think you could that might be something to put in the dissolution plan, is that the HOA will release all liens in favor of the HOA because it's going away.
In favor of the HOA. What does that mean?
Well, like you could, you know, as the HOA, you just say, I release all liens filed. Okay. If you have a list, a specific one.
Yeah,
you could
release.
Do a global one, and that will generally be effective.
There's not that many. We could probably
the ones that you know specifically, I would go ahead and list them. You say, hey, I release all liens, including but not limited to, and you list those.
Okay, tangent to that, variances that have been granted in the past that might come up in the future for somebody who would move in and say, your property is too close to the property line, but the HOA had
So that. Enforcement of a deed restriction is also 4 years. So if it's been more than 4 years that that's been done, no one can sue for it anymore.
Okay.
So there's that component of it. So, for example, if they built a house or a fence too close to the property line,
okay.
As long as they don't modify that, as long as they don't rebuild or something like that, then no one can really do anything about it. Now, if you want to incorporate that, I would do that in the amendment to the deed restrictions. I would, if you want to grandfather. Or do something in there, I would put something in the deed restrictions saying all variances granted prior to, or all
situations. Because there are some things that we've got, like a single wide mobile home out there that shouldn't be on a property. We're not.
But you got to be careful
position.
With that because you may not want to do that globally.
Yeah, well, we're not in any position to do anything about it, with or without the HOA. So.
Well, and one. Thing that has
it's been there
up,
for over 4 years anyways.
One thing that's come up when I've dealt with other people on either side, actually, where the HOA... So there's better... Now there are... They've kind of put into the statutes a process for obtaining kind of a formal variance that actually didn't used to exist. And so that was kind of the question of, well, the HOA gave me a variance. Does that prevent my neighbor, though, from suing on the deed restrictions? And kind of the question was, why? I don't think it does prevent the neighbor. The fact that the HOA granting a variance, unless the deed restrictions said, and a lot of them will, like, for example, on the Architectural Control Committee, mm-hmm. right? Say the Architectural Control Committee approves the plan. So if they approve it, even if it's not in conformance kind of thing. But there was never, most of them didn't really have any formal procedure for an HOA to give a variance. And so the question then was, well, the HOA couldn't sue to enforce that deed restriction because they're essentially, it's the concept of estoppel. Right, they can't say one thing and then try and do the opposite. But the individual homeowners, is that binding on them? Maybe. It was kind of a loosey question.
Gray area. Okay.
But I think most of the variances sounds like would be covered by a 4 year. They've been there for more than 4 years anyway.
Let me say that differently. This mobile home that should not be on that property has been there more than 4 years. You're saying the statute of limitations says, well, we can't go after them now anyway.
Probably
it's clearly
not.
Been out there for 4 years.
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, that would be
now the deed restrictions, I think, say something different. They say that by not enforcement does not mean that you can't enforce.
That really goes more to
at a later date.
Yeah, so like because I didn't enforce, you know, some fence ordinance, I can't then now go, I'm not somehow waived enforcement of some other violation or some new or different violation.
Well, we just enforced one pretty egregious. It was over $1 million sale. He was encroaching on another person's property with a building. We told him he had to move it or
so the mobile home would come up is if someone else goes and moves a mobile home in, you can say, that's not allowed.
A new
They're like,
mobile home.
But you didn't enforce that one over there. And we're like, yeah, that was a lapse. We should have, but we didn't. But there's a non-waiver.
Okay.
And the courts do say, well, that's what that means, is non-waiver. That was a classic defense on enforcement of deed restrictions, is that you weren't enforcing them, and so therefore
yeah,
you've waived
precedence
the right
was
to
set,
enforce
so,
them.
Yeah.
And so most deed restrictions now have those permissions in there, and the courts have been following them pretty well.
Can we pause for a second?
Yeah.
So, Dick, I think we've gotten most of these questions answered. I mean, the idea is we have an idea of how we could possibly dissolve the HOA. The minute that happens, it really becomes the individual homeowners.
Sorry,
to
do this. There's no organization.
And there are lots and lots of neighborhoods that have deed restrictions and no HOA.
Right. So yeah. I think
clear.
These have been
okay.
answered.
Yeah.
Who enforces it with no HOA? It's got
to
be.
Good
so I'm going through your
Adrian,
questions, and
yeah.
it looks like most of these have been answered under
Adrian might be a problem.
That one heading.
Yeah.
Is there any other concerns you have? I went through down. I know you put a good list together. Some of this is procedural about how are we going to do this, votes taken, etc., which we need to decide.
We discussed that at your house.
Okay.
All right, let me go through my thing real quick, because we're going to run kind of short. If we're going to try to do this in an hour, I don't want to keep it too long.
Okay.
The website, we've discussed records. What kind of maintenance of records do we have to keep when this is all over with? Do we have to keep 5 years? Who's going to do that? How does that get done? Does it need to be in a trust or something? And even the vote. How do we keep the vote so it's stored?
So, the vote to...
To prove that we actually had, you know, 2/3 vote that passed this passage.
Yeah,
does that
I mean,
need to
I would
recorded at the county and some kind of
not this vote.
No, I'm talking about the amendment itself.
To amend the deed restrictions, that gets recorded.
The amendment gets recorded, but it's the proof of that we actually had the not right amount of members to make this happen. Do we?
So
need
I've
to
seen
keep
the
that?
Deed restrictions. I've seen that done two ways. One, they will just have everybody sign the amendment itself, or the 2/3 sign mm-hmm. the amendment itself. So it's a very large document, right? Because
okay.
you have about 50 pages of signature pages that
right.
are literally attached. Those are almost unchallengeable because
mm-hmm.
the signatures are there. Someone would have to go and prove whoever signed it wasn't actually an owner. Some of them will do it kind of saying, hey, you know, I'm the president and the secretary. The meeting was called on this date. 2/3 of the members have voted, you know, either by in person or by mail or however you did it, I'm hereby certifying that 2/3 of that. And then they just record that it's sworn under oath. And generally, I mean, you know, that's not a big issue because title companies aren't necessarily insuring the presence of an HOA.
Mm-hmm.
They're really more just notifying people that, hey, you know, there might be an HOA and assessments and things like that. So I wouldn't think that would necessarily impact sale. That the only issue that the potential I would see for that coming up is if someone wants to try and say that the HOA still exists or the old deed restrictions apply, not the new ones, and try and claim that this new document. And so that to me is a much lower risk, right? It would have to be someone that for whatever reason, but yeah, you'd want to keep those records. As far as the, you know, we can keep some of those here, you know, as the attorney for the, you know, we can keep copies of that in our system.
Yeah.
Usually a copy is
I don't even
enough.
Know. I mean, if somebody wanted
to keep a paper copy.
If somebody wanted to verify it down the road, I don't know who would. But let's say a homeowner or some government agent would see one.
Again, limitations also is going to kick in there, too.
Yeah.
They're going to have a certain amount of time to challenge that.
I didn't know if I'd have to
rent
a storage spot and keep all the old records because I was the last president.
Again, I would say nothing longer than 4 years. If you are a filing entity with the IRS, then, you know, maybe like the 7 or 10 year, because you're dealing with government gets longer statute limitations.
Okay.
Than just
well, we've covered assets.
People.
We've covered variances. We've covered kind of the rights. Not much we can do about helping limit liability for the homeowners
but,
on a lawsuit
yeah,
down
so
the road.
It, well, and just on the voting part, so once you vote and you do get to the end, you will file a certificate of dissolution with the Secretary of State. And I think it's 2 years after that, it's done. You can't reinstate it. So
okay.
Again, it's someone that wants to complain about it is going to have to, they can't sit and wait, you know, 8-10 years and be like, oh, wait, whatever happened to that HOA? I think that was done improperly. I'm like, oh, it's too late for that.
Okay. Reestablishment of the HOA, we said that's just anybody can do that. If they come up with enough people and they want
to. They could, yeah, I mean, there's ways
to
create
to,
HOAs.
They just
right.
have to
but
recreate
you,
it.
You have to volunteer to be part of it originally, correct?
You have to get enough. So I've seen what are basically opt-in HOAs. So some of them are just kind of it's more of a private club, for example. So like it's restricted to owners in a subdivision. I've worked with one in Houston that they did that. So the original deed restrictions not create an HOA. They've just basically created, but it has no assessment authority, right? It can't compel people to pay dues. I've seen some that didn't create an HOA in the initial documents, and it was basically an opt-in, and once you opt-in, your property now becomes burdened by that. So it's saying, hey, and usually those are ones that have amenities.
Or do they have property across from?
They're like, right, we own a pool. If you want to be a member and have access to these amenities that the HOA controls, you're required to join, and joining means that your property is subject to our assessment authority.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so then if an owner feels that's a benefit to them, then they join in, and then it's going to be binding on subsequent
right,
buyers
from that,
their property.
Yeah.
Okay. So we we're kind of at this point where you had recommended the last time that we could do like a standalone amendment that would come in and say do away with, you know, sections that we need to do away with. I think we all kind of agree on the board, would prefer to see the amendment be a whole new draft of the deed restrictions.
And I think that works well for what you want to do.
Because there's so much of it's been hogged out.
Yeah, and to a large extent, it's a cleaner way of doing it rather than, because, you know, as an attorney, when I see like a bylaws or these deed restrictions or company agreements that have multiple amendments, I kind of have to read all of them and go, okay, what did this change here? And,
yeah.
So yeah, what you would do, as you said here, so amended and restated, some amount of this, like this.
Yeah, see, this is what Hines did prior. This is that's how they amended it. They just redid the document and then made
so you
changes.
Take, because Hines doesn't own it anymore. Probably here's where I would put. Whereas I would cite this provision.
Yeah, the copy I sent you.
It's not the copy you sent me.
I might have sent you the wrong one. Let me see.
Is that the blued out one?
Yes.
Or what
did I do with it? That's this one, right?
Yeah, that's the one I sent you.
That's fine. So what I would do.
So yeah, I figured this preamble or this first part would need to be redone
out.
Completely.
And what I would put in this place here is you go to the so I would describe here to say, look, you know, this is Horse Creek Ranch, describe the property. You know, this is the property here, and I'd say it's subject to these deed restrictions. And what I would say, and then I would cite the specific provision of those deed restrictions about amendment. I would say, you know.
Section 803.
Yeah, under 803, the deed restrictions can be amended by, and then just, you know, just copy it out.
All right,
so and then you say
using
here,
the verbiage that's here, we just recraft it.
Yeah, and then instead of Hines of Texas, we say, you know, the undersigned, or after a vote, or however you do it.
Something that we should kind of turn over to you, this part?
I can draft that for you if you want to do that.
I think we've done pretty good with the rest of it as far as that goes.
Yeah, I can do that for you.
It was the beginning and the end, you know.
And that's a maybe like half-hour project. That's not like a 10-hour
I figured this was more in your wheelhouse than in ours.
Yeah,
we'll
no, I can write
six
that
six
up
or seven times
but,
before we get it
but,
right.
But that's what I do, is I set out in the first page, this is why you're seeing a restated one. You're telling the person that gets this, this is what happened, and this is, and you also want to put in there your authority to do that, because you're telling a title examiner, this is why it's enforceable.
Gotcha.
Because the deed restriction said, I can amend it by this vote, or here's this vote.
But I thought we were still within that time frame where only the declarant... No, you and I chatted about that before. So we are comfortable that if we get 2/3 vote of the property, of the acreage, that shows up at the meeting. No, the 2/3 vote at the general ballot. That Rick Hines cannot step in and say, no, you can't do this. I'm the only one. As long as we get that 2/3 vote.
The question was, did you still need declarant approval?
To update the bylaws, because all this requires that we update the bylaws and just remove the HOA.
This is to update the deed restrictions.
I said bylaws. You're right. Deed restrictions. You're right. That's my fear. What happens if Rick Hines...
I don't think we should leave him out of this regardless. I think he should be at some point in here. We got to at least... if we get it drafted, we say, Rick, this is what we're going to do. Are you okay with this?
So best practices would be to have Rick sign as declarant to that amended one. Because if he signs it, that removes any question of whether he needed to or not. So if you can get him to approve it, I would do that. If he doesn't approve it or he says, I'm not interested, well, and so that's, again, you know, there's that. If you tell him and he says no,
then
he's
going to start
notice.
He's
at least put on notice. I don't know how much he cares. Like I said, he told me he does own, he holds some liens. So property that he sold is still under, he's in seller financing. It'd be my guess on that.
Yeah.
And so if he ever needs to foreclose on that, he would want to, that's going to be his primary interest, is if he then subsequently becomes an owner of those properties because he had to foreclose on the lien, he wants to make sure that he can maintain his interest in those. That would be his concern as
an
owner.
So if Rick Hines signs and files the new property deed restrictions, At that point, and it no longer has the HOA, mm-hmm. at that point, does it require the two-thirds approval of the property owners?
I would, just because...
Amendments he's filed in the past haven't, but that was when he didn't have... I mean, he has like very little interest in that anymore. I would think he'd be liable to some degree if somebody wanted to fight him on it.
So this, where it says...
I think you're okay. going to find all that in 803.
Yeah. It's not unlimited for Hines, for the declarant. It said, you know, the primary one is to comply with financing eligibility, and it's mostly VA. You know, like VA and Fannie Mae and stuff, there are certain provisions that they wouldn't insure or they wouldn't finance for, and so it let developers be able to go back and kind of fix those so that home buyers could actually buy the property because those were big lenders. And then this says other purpose deemed by declarant to be reasonable, necessary, or convenient to complete his development plan. Well, development's done.
Okay.
So it's not like he can just go in and change it however he wants.
Do we pull those sections out as well when we do the amendment? I mean, that's kind of irrelevant.
I would take that out. I mean, I would, I haven't asked him. When I talked with him about it, he's like, well, I just need to look at what they want to change. I don't know. I don't think he'd care that much about that because he's not active. Those are really more to develop okay. it. So I would guess he wouldn't. I would probably send it to him first before okay. you actually vote on it and just say, would you approve that? Just to see if there's going to be, or I would send it to him fairly early on to say, yeah. is there any of these that you're going to disapprove of? Because we just like to know before we go to the trouble of trying to get it.
Okay.
Just to get an idea. I kind of don't think he would care about those. I think he's more interested as an owner of the property.
Yeah, he doesn't want his property devalued.
Like he doesn't want to be able to let mobile homes come in next door. Like, yeah. He's going to care about those type of things.
And we're not changing substantially any of the restrictions. We're just changing
yeah,
who controls the
these ones more titled. And so, because I noticed you had highlighted in blue some of these of like, can we take out?
Yeah, I didn't
out?
Know that was, yeah, because to section 2.1, I just did the whole thing because I didn't know what needed to be remained or not. Article 3, 4, 5, and 6, they could be yeah. deleted in whole. And then the rest of these references.
Yeah, like this one, I would assume he's not interested in keeping that right. So I would at least propose it to him to say, we're going to take that out too. Because I don't think he's interested in
yeah, and again, it's mostly about the development of the property and yeah. withdrawal of the land. He has no interest yeah. in any of that.
I wouldn't think he would be. Some of these really, and again, these are really more just that the declarant could give specific variances, and yeah. I don't think he's interested in that either.
Yeah, that's why I highlighted those as well.
So I think you, I would certainly remove those if that's what you want to do and propose it to him, because I don't think he's going to care about
commercial,
almost all of those.
Commercial activity, that was for when he's doing model homes and stuff, that's not yeah. there anymore. Red, I've already removed, that was Architectural Control Committee, so that's gone.
So again, I think most of that will probably be fine, but that's where I would say you might, at least early on in the process, just say, hey, this is what, or I can send it to him, that's fine too, saying this is what they're going to propose, are you going to have any issues with any of this, just let me know and I can bring it back to them.
Yeah, as long as you understand, see the overall understanding of what we're trying to do and can explain to him what we're trying to do, I think I'm comfortable with that.
By the way, do you have to be at the airport at 12?
No, now? No, I've got another, I'm meeting with another group at 1:30 and I need to look at their stuff too.
So we need to be courteous.
I just need a little bit of time for them. I think that's generally fine, but I mean, the way I read this, I don't know that it doesn't read that it you need the express consent of the declarant.
Okay.
So,
but just a matter of courtesy and just
I mean,
to well,
remove
it.
That question.
I
if
don't
he approves whether you needed it or not, it doesn't matter. Gotcha. Is what that happens with. I mean, it does seem to indicate at the end of a 10-year period.
Well, that's after the 50. So there's the initial 50, and then there's a 10-year period after that. We only required 50% of a vote after the first initial 50, but before that it's 66.6% or two-thirds.
Okay.
The way I read it.
I mean, it says it should be effective for 50 years, after which time. Well, and so that's one question. So this says it's effective for 10 years, after which time it can be amended by an instrument signed not less than 66 and two-thirds based on acreage. The property code says if it doesn't otherwise provide for amendment, which you take the position prior to 50 years, it doesn't otherwise provide.
Gotcha. I'm okay with your answer so far.
Of the
members. Two-thirds of the owners.
Not of the acreage.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are back to member.
And again, that's something to maybe, if you want to be boots and suspenders. Because you're saying two-thirds of the members is higher, would be more people.
Yeah, it's a higher threshold because we've got...
Mm-hmm. Than acreage, probably.
Oh, yeah.
So if you've got two-thirds of the members and two-thirds of the acreage, then again, you remove that question.
Oh, so we could make that both qualifications. You need two-thirds of
that
the
membership. That would be ideal.
If two-thirds. You do it by two-thirds of the membership, you by default have two-thirds of the acreage.
I don't see there's any other way around.
There's okay. No way that...
Let's not beat that one. I think I get it. All right.
Or you just write it, once we obtain two-thirds of the total acreage and membership.
That would be a pickle that I don't know I want to paint myself into. I mean, we could get to the point where we do get the acreage, but we don't get the members.
Yeah,
and
that's
do
nice.
We still try to proceed? Especially if we got the declarant on our side, that's almost waiting in that direction.
And I'm okay with just in the plan that we put together, we say, you know, the code says, or the current restrictions say two-thirds of the acreage, and that's the threshold we're going to use, and put that in the plan, and don't talk about two-thirds of the members.
Yeah. And hope we get it, and then we don't have a question.
So, Stephanie, you've got to run, but so the ball's in our court to get you an updated draft of at least what we think needs to go into it. You're going to take that, or were you going to do the whole thing?
What would you like me to do? Like I said, I can
what
update this amendment.
What was the half-hour estimate? Was that
that was to
just
update
the
this, the recitals?
Yeah, Section 1 and Section 9, the signature block.
And there's no specific form for the plan. It's just... you know, when we do these for like small family LLCs and corporations and stuff, mm-hmm. It's literally like one page. We just say, hey, they're going to pay all debts and distribute the funds. But there's no like specific form you have to have. So okay. I would just, so if you want to, you know, take a stab together to do a plan and then just send it to me and say, hey, is there any changes you would suggest? Or,
and what's your turnaround time for generally? For a half-hour service, Roy, I'm booked 6 weeks out. Or
not
no,
quite
I
that
probably...
far. I'm going to be out of town a bit the end of this week and next week. So the next couple of weeks, I'm kind of in and out just because it's the summer. But after that, I'll be back and
okay.
You know, I can do those.
We need to get the draft ready. We need to be able to have the board look at it. So we're probably talking a month out easily for us to even have something to give to Stephanie.
For the plan.
For the plan, and well, for the bylaws, the updated
the
bylaws.
Amendment can proceed the way it is. The amendment doesn't need anything to do with the plan. The plan would be taking the amendment.
I can work on this now.
The amendments, the plan's the shell. Mm-hmm. This is the actual core of it, along with what we're going to do with the funds. And
this is part of the plan, is really what, this is step one in the plan.
So that can proceed full throttle. The plan, we'll try to develop what we need to put in the plan, which will be that, and what
but
we're
you and I
do.
Have been passing back and forth proposed updates to the bylaws, and the bylaws refer to
you're talking not bylaws, but the
I'm sorry,
yeah,
you're right,
I'll just
bylaws.
Yeah, we'll just assume
deed restrictions. So we've been.
I think we're there. You think we're pretty close, right?
This is pretty close to what you want to present to the members. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I can update that. Are you anticipating just, and I can update it for you. Are you anticipating that your two thirds are going to sign like a signature page that isn't attached to this amendment that's recorded?
Well, our voting process. We haven't really honed down yet. We're going through a couple different ideas. One would be a prolonged voting, probably over a course of a couple months where we would set up at the church with a notary. People come in, notarize, boom. Try to get as many as we can on that, and then where we fall short, we go door to door with a notary in our back pocket.
Well, and so that would be that they're going to have a signature page for each owner, and then that's basically your recorded is going to have about 50 pages.
I think that's probably best.
We would record.
Covers
so
all the bases.
So if we have a format of a ballot that allows for that, that's probably what we'll do.
Well, yeah, and so what I would do on that, because you're going to, so at the vote for the plan, that's what your plan will say. Is say, okay, you know, we're going to have a meeting to approve basically the termination of the HOA. Here's our plan. First, we're going to get the deed restrictions amended to remove the HOA and other amendments there too. And so there, and I would have people vote on that separately just because under the deed restrictions, you've got people voting to amend the deed restrictions. So that's step one on the plan. Mm-hmm. Then once that has been done, and I would put a timeline, say we're going to give ourselves honor before, I give yourself a lot more time than you think you'll need. Just say it as an honor before 2 years from this meeting, you know, we are going to go, the board is going to go and collect signatures. And that's how the members approve it, is honor before 2 years, the owner of that property signs to consent to their amend, you know, to amend the deed restrictions. And once, and if we get that, because it's contingent,
mm-hmm. Right.
If we get the 2/3, then we move on with the termination of the nonprofit corporation. And that's where we're going to, you know, we're going to pay these costs. Here's our estimated costs or categories of costs. And then any remaining funds are going to go to volunteer fire department, and the board is, you know, the board at that time is then authorized to make the necessary filings with the Secretary of State and the IRS, with the assistance of counsel. And just like I said, it doesn't have to be super detailed. That's, you can say that to say, you know, make the filings. Really, the main one I would want to spend a little more detail on is the funds, because that's what people care about.
Do you want to take a stab at that, right now?
The final sign-off document?
The plan.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if that's something you want. You took the best notes.
I'm the one who suddenly has time on my hands, unlike you, who's still fully employed. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think once you've got...
I'll help whatever I can, I think...
Once you have that put together, you would have a board meeting.
Put somebody in charge.
Because the board needs to recommend to bring that to the members. So if the board approves it at a board meeting... And then
we could have another...
Then you're going to call a meeting of the members. You can do it at your regular meeting, or you can call a meeting for that purpose.
Okay.
And that's where you get the 2/3 vote.
So we'll probably... Today was supposed to be our meeting, and I wanted to make sure we talked to you before we had this meeting, because we've been putting it off for a couple months. And we'll have a called meeting then, probably the next 2 weeks, for the board meeting.
So set
that up, and then that way we can get it going on this little
thing. So follow up. Stephanie's going to adjust the draft of...
I'll adjust the draft of the amendment.
Of the amendment.
And if you want me to look at any plan... But once you have... I mean, the board needs to... Once you have the plan finalized, if that's... Mm-hmm. You know, you want me to review it first, that's fine. Once everything is final, the board takes a vote. We're going to present this to the membership. This is what we're going to present. We're going to recommend that they dissolve the entity, and here's how we're going to do it.
So Stephanie's going to draft the amendment, Roy will draft the plan, and then we'll circulate it to all parties just to make sure we're covering all our bases. Take it to the board to review. Okay, got it. Alrighty. We have a path forward, I believe.
Okay. I think so. And y'all, I was late, obviously. Y'all covered
you
the
slacker.
Funds. I know. It's like work has to come first.
I know. I used to be there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
We covered the funds being able to be donated or not, correct?
Yeah. So the business organization code says you just need to send those to another nonprofit.
Okay.
That has similar, goals to the entity. And I think the volunteer fire department would meet that category.
Okay. So as long as
they're about as close as you're going to get.
Yeah.
As long as they've got a 501c3, we can give them the money. Or divide it amongst these three volunteer fire.
Yeah,
departments.
So when you file the certification with the state of Texas, they don't ask for any proof. That you just have to, whoever's going to sign that form, mm-hmm. has to, you're basically signing that we've done that.
Okay.
So bylaws, not actual bylaws. Have you looked at the bylaws recently? I have not.
Not recently.
I don't know if there's anything in there we need to deal with or not. Or are the bylaws only for the HOA itself?
They should only be for the HOA.
So once the HOA goes away, the bylaws are gone.
That's my thought, is once we remove the...
Yes.
There's nothing in the bylaws that isn't, I believe, enforceable by law if the deed restrictions has dissolved.
I don't see that this covers anything about dissolution. So yeah, I mean this covers.
So that just dies on the vine.
This covers the organization. So once you dissolve the organization, it's gone.
Okay. Good question, because it was going to come up.
I thought about it like kind of last minute and had a little small note here.
Especially since I kept saying bylaws. No, shut up.
Well, every time you said it made me think of it. And then when we started talking again, I'd forget. All right. So.
Okay.
Stephanie, well, I appreciate
you've been
it again.
Amazing. Thank you.
Oh, well, I was going to here because I will. And this you can get them online. I can send you. I'll send you a PDF if you want. That's from the Texas AG's website.
Do.
That kind of just gives you a little overview of dissolving an entity. I will send you.
Don,
these
you want
as
me
well.
To research that and send it out, or
this?
Yeah. Or do you want to? I'm not saying that we all need it, but.
And again, and y'all can copy this and distribute as you. I mean, this is all public.
This is a photocopy of the property code.
This is the business organization code. So here, this one lists some statutes. They're saying, hey, here are the ones that apply. I copied those for you, or at least most of them.
Well, why don't you send me the PDF of these? You got both of these, or just
I don't know.
This one's just a photocopy.
I can send you those statutes, but.
You want me to PDF? I can PDF. Yeah.
You're the one doing the writing.
This one I have in a PDF, so I'll email them to you as well. But
if I get a digital copy of whatever I can get,
I'll send it to you.
You'll
as well.
Have those hard copies, and you. Can,
I don't know if you've got my email address, but I'll give it to you.
I can always forward them to you as well.
Okay.
Okay. Like awesome. You emailed me these, so I can just reply back. I'll attach those. And you're free to distribute those to whoever.
Oh, I didn't read that email. So okay. Sorry. Now
that's just, why I gave you a hard copy of what I sent you today.
Yeah, thank
you. I figured somebody would show up and not have a. Oh, I haven't read it yet. Like a hard copy. All right. Well, thanks again. I appreciate it. I know we're eating you up on this.
That's okay.
What's your main business? I mean,
I practice in real estate, so I do all sorts of real estate. So you know, buying help people buy and sell properties, do leasing, do. Real estate-backed loans and financing. I do some amount of litigation. That tends to, we represent several cities, so sometimes I get involved in that, but then just, you know, we do, I've got a couple lawsuits going on some lease issues. We've had some issues with easements come up. Easements are really a ripe source for litigation. People fight about easements a lot. We did a big lawsuit last year. Now that was on behalf of the Brazos River Authority, but that dealt heavily with deed restrictions on one of their lakes. Someone was challenging them on that. And so we got into some property law with that.
I'm a kind of a hack landlord. I got two properties down in Killeen, so I didn't know if I should seek you out. If I ever need any advice, I'll probably look
at
those. We do. Actually, I'm working on for the city of Killeen. Someone has challenged their code enforcement.
They are ruthless. Their code enforcement? Ooh. I get all the time. I get written up for my renters.
I'm probably biased, but their yard was a mess.
I don't disagree with that, but they will go down the street and they will write
the owner of the property, her husband,
is a quarter inch too tall.
Is a fairly notorious attorney in Killeen. So he has made a very big name for himself. He's been sanctioned and a very large judgment against him related to some improper tactics that he had done in a big lawsuit there about 10 or 15 years ago. So that's made it extra fun. I do get involved in some amount of litigation on those types of issues. So.
Yeah, I'll send some business your way because we've got a trust we're thinking to put together for our personal trust. Fund.
Yeah, I don't do as much in the. We have attorneys that do estate planning.
Okay, and that's sort of.
So that stuff I tend to, because I have, you know, board certified estate planning attorneys that are my partners, I tend to refer some
that's
of
fine.
It to them because they're a bit more.
Just my
that.
Current lawyer quit returning my calls. Go figure. I thought I was a nice guy, but I couldn't get him. He had retired. He said, "No, I'll take this on, Roy. I'm already retired, but." I guess he decided, no, I'm really retired, Roy. I don't want to mess with you.
Well,
so.
Well, as I said, I'm not an expert on tax law, and that's the main reason. Yeah. That's one of the big factors people are when they're setting these up. And mm-hmm. So let me refer you to someone that actually knows the tax consequences.
Oh, gosh. I'm glad we met today, because I may be going to the chiropractor Friday after all.
What's it, your back?
Yeah, it's been, it's